You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Andy Richter, and this is a special edition of the Three Questions. It is the best of 2021, which is kind of like saying the best formed turd, because 2021, well, actually 2021 wasn't that bad. You compare it to 2020, where we were really stuck indoors and really isolated. At least we got out a little bit in 2021. You know, we're back home now. We're living with the ongoing consequences of multiple stupidities. But, you know, you got this podcast to listen to. If you don't know, the Three Questions is a podcast that's basically meant to sort of, you know, get people to sort of examine where they're from and why they are the way they are. The three questions are, where do you come from? Where are you going? And what have you learned? And for me, one of the best things about this show is that I don't talk to anybody that I don't want to talk to. You know, like, I was on a talk show for years, and frequently we had guests that we weren't that interested in, to be honest. I mean, I didn't have to talk to them mostly. I mean, you know, just sat and looked at the back of their heads. But, you know, when you got a show, it's a volume business. You got to make the donuts. You get a lot of people in that you're kind of iffy about. None of these people, especially the people that are on this edition, none of them are iffy. They're all top drawer folks. And we're going to be hearing from Chelsea Peretti, Bowen Yang, Aisha Tyler, Jason Mantzoukas, Nikki Glaser, and Tim Meadows. What do they have in common? They're all really fucking funny. Like, that's part of it. But also, they're just great people. They gave a great interview. They were generous with their time with me and with you, frankly, because this is all for you people. I don't have any stake in this. I mean, I'm barely the medication barely makes me even aware of where I am most of the time. So the first clip we have is with Chelsea Peretti. Who years ago named one of her specials one of the greats, which I will always love her for doing that. She's a very, very funny stand-up comedian, been around for a while, is now a mother, and has a hilarious Instagram, which is mostly just her watching videos. But she was on the show, and she talked a little bit about growing up in Northern California. She was a funny, weird kid. She ended up having a lot of comedian friends come out of her childhood with her and crushes on a few of them. And she also talked very sort of knowingly about having clarity about your passions. So here she is, Chelsea Peretti. Were you a funny kid in school? I asked that a lot.
Yeah, I feel like I was weird. I was called weird, which is now to this day a word I really despise, until junior high, in which point my survival instincts kicked in and I had to become extremely funny.
Well, weird and funny often segue.
Yeah.
There's a lot of overlap.
The weird frequently. Was a training camp for the funny that was later to emerge.
What did weird mean?
Like, me and my friend were kind of like dorks, and we would like, I found this play we had written called Gertrude's Revenge, and it and the subtitle was All Popular Kids Beware. So that's what I was up to. It's like, couldn't be more of a textbook fucking dork. And and you know, I don't know, there was a really pretty hot girl there and her mom was heavily involved in the PTA, and I always came to school and like she was like my friend. Then she wasn't speaking to me and no one else was speaking to me. Like elementary school was horrible for me and like kind of emo and painful. And then junior high, I don't know, it just kicked in. I was under constant attack. The junior high school that I went to, everyone was always like just, I mean, first of all, people were hilarious and they were always attacking each other. So you had to be ready because you were always vulnerable. And I can still look in that yearbook and be like, this is what this person was made fun of for. This is what that person, I could look at every picture and be like, it comes back clear as day. It's like a trauma memory. But then on the other hand, that's when I became like crazy and funny. And
yeah. Now that is interesting because like you knew Andy Samberg and Moshe Kasher when you were like other comedians. Like, what is it about where you guys grew up?
Yeah.
That makes it so funny. Is it like a super liberal area?
It is. You know, yeah. Berkeley, yeah. Bay Area. I think that Moshe actually went to the school I was just talking about. He was, I think he was like a year younger than me or two. And so he was like really tiny at the time and always had red cheeks. That's all I really remember. And he was always wearing a starter jacket as were most of the kids at that time. And Nike Cortez and whatnot. But, and then Andy went to Berkeley High. Well, I knew Andy from elementary school. And he was in that time where I was considered weird and I had a crush on him and he didn't really care. And that was Andy. But then he went.
Was he at least kind about it?
I don't even really remember. I mean, I just remember a lot of like.
That means no.
No, I mean, he wasn't mean. I don't remember fucking him being dick. Mean. Yeah, fuck Andy.
Fuck you, Samberg.
All high and mighty. Fucking prick. no, I think it was, you know, when you're that age, your crush is so completely in isolation. It's like you're living in an entire world by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I just remember it was like calling his house and I feel like hanging up and just thinking he was cute.
And what also too is weird is like the seemingly arbitrariness of it. Like, why this person? Why am like, you know, like you have a detector in your brain and they have a chip in theirs and it's like, I'm obsessed with you.
Yeah, it's especially weird with like little kids, you know, like when you get like, so I have some younger kids in my family and they're starting to be in the age of crushes and you're like, it's so weird. Who are they going to like and why? Like, it feels weird that kids have crushes, you know, young people.
Yeah. I was just thinking the other day when my daughter was, I think she was, it was, you know, maybe middle school, but my son is gay and has been out for a long time. And so she, you know, being gay has been a very, you know, like normal thing in our household. Yeah. And I was just thinking about, she got in the car after school, my ex-wife was driving and she got in and the first thing she said is like, well, I guess I'm straight.
She was disappointed.
And there was, yeah, she was disappointed and then would not explain. Like, why? What are you talking about? Never mind. Just trust me, I'm straight.
Oh my! Like, so is it like she liked someone and he didn't like her back, or like she tried to make out with a girl?
Still to this day, don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I can't wait.
Heard some Indigo Girls.
Yeah,
I don't
felt
know,
nothing. You
know, felt nothing.
Yeah. That's so funny.
I honestly don't know, but yeah, it is. It is weird. I mean, well, and also too, like having kids that go through those ages and stuff, you just realize like, oh my God, you're just like a cloud. Like you're not even like a set thing. You're just like a cloud of hormones and emotions and feelings and a bombardment of information.
Yeah.
You know,
I always think that because it's like, you know, you ask tiny kids what they want to be when they grow up. It's like, yeah, cool. You'll be a vet, I'm sure, you know?
Right,
and then
right.
like, even when someone's in college, it's totally unclear like what they're actually going to be, you know, like, or.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Or what they're going to look like. Till they've gone through puberty, you don't even know what a kid's really going to look like. Like no. There's a lot of reveals. That's what keeps it exciting.
Yes. And also different parts grow at different rates. You know, like,
that's
especially
what he said.
Like, No, you know what I mean? Like kids, like, just like get giant ears all of a sudden. Yeah. And then their skull catches up to the ears, you know?
Yeah. I think probably seventh grade was the ugliest I've ever been in my life. I was just like kneecaps and nose. And I had braces and a perm, and I straightened my bangs with a curling iron and curled them under. It was just a mess.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like, that's the cool part about being like super ugly when you were like in your teens and puberty, is that no matter what, you have nowhere to go but a better look.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you interested in performing? Like, were you in plays and things?
Yeah. Yeah. I did theater and stuff since I was really little. I started doing classes at the American Conservatory Theater, their young conservatory in San Francisco. So I was like, really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was really into theater, and I did like their main stage in ACT in San Francisco. I did two productions there and missed a bunch of school. That's why I think I don't know anything about states and geography and things like that.
And so was that in your head? Like, you know, speaking of like asking a little kid what they want to do, was that kind of in your mind?
Well, what's funny is someone just found in my family something I had written, like, about how I wanted to be. I think I posted it to Instagram. I have to find it. But it was like about how I wanted to be rich and famous for acting or something. And I was like, well, 2 out of 3. But no, I mean, it was kind of cool to see like a dream that I had for so long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I found years later, I found, you know, like one of those baby books that you're supposed to update, you know?
Yeah.
Like first,
yeah.
Second,
and
third.
You do the first couple months and then you never touch it again.
Well, my family, or I think my mom did, or my grandma did, like the first 2 or 3 years. And then there was like a 4-year gap. And then I found it and started filling it in myself.
Oh my God.
It's so sad. And there was a point where when I was 5, I said, I want to be a fireman.
Well, wait, how many years commitment was this book? It's like up through 15.
It was like, yeah, like exactly. Yeah.
That's too much.
Like some, it was like, you know, like something you buy at like a Hallmark store.
Yeah.
You know?
But still, I mean, it should end at a year. Like it's wild that it would go anywhere. I mean, that's a huge undertaking for any parent.
Yeah, I know. But it's also, you know, there were things.
It's like 48. Andy just tried a matcha latte.
32. First gray hair. At 40, doctors were right. He needs reading glasses.
And it's like, who, and also it's like, who will eventually read this? This is a lot of details.
Yeah.
Your biographer, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I remember like at 5, I think I said fireman for some reason, which I feel like I probably didn't really. I just was like, I felt like I got to put something.
Yeah.
But then like at 6 or 7, I actually, I went from actor to then the next year, comedian. Like I'd obviously learned the word comedian. So
yeah,
there again, it was kind of the same thing.
That's you when know. You first became aware of how hot actors are.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And I knew I could never hold it up. I was like, actor. And then I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like,
comedian.
I'm going to have this toddler body the rest of my life. Fuck that. I'm a comedian. People are going to laugh at this. When I take my clothes off, it's a different thing. But yeah, so I mean, I do feel like, yeah, it is kind of neat that you knew this thing.
It is. I always think that that's like one of the biggest gifts I've ever, you know, I have in my life, is a clarity of what I'm passionate about and what drives me. Because when people don't have that, I literally have no idea what to tell them. Like if someone's like, yeah, I don't really know what I want to do, and da da da, it's just so hard for me to, I just feel so thankful that I have a passion that drives my life, because I can't imagine what life would be without that, you know?
Yeah.
It's akin to a religion, you know, and what I feel like some people get from religion.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
This next clip is from Bowen Yang, who has taken the world by storm. I knew Bowen. He used to do these hilarious kind of lip sync videos. And it's just like, who's this guy doing these hilarious lip sync videos to old campy clips and not so old campy clips. But SNL took note of him too, and they hired him. And he is one of the funniest people on that show right now. And when he talked to me, he talked a little bit about the ups and downs of that job, because there are plenty of both. He got advice from some former castmates. He gets into the hiring process, which is pretty interesting. And he also tells us something about those viral lip sync videos that he does. I love Bo and Yang.
I think with SNL too, it, you know, with the exception of like Eddie Murphy or something, it takes a while.
It takes a
while. And it's so strange because there's like so many shows, so many episodes of SNL where it only occurs to me afterwards, like, oh, I only saw Melissa Villaseñor once in that episode.
Sure.
I mean, there's just, you know, the way that it all, the cards get kind of dealt, you can go through a few weeks of not having much to do.
Oh, I've had those stretches, and I anticipate having those stretches going forward. But yeah, it's a job where it only gets clear in hindsight, which might be true for any job, but for me, it's like, but this is just the way that like people like build out legacies there, I think, is that like when you think of a cast member that you love, maybe with the exception of Eddie Murphy, you go, you're only really thinking of the highlight reels. You're not thinking about, oh, they were dead. Like that was a sketch where they didn't really deliver or whatever. You know, like I don't think we think of like SNL cast members in those terms, but I think any cast member will tell you, I mean, not that I've like surveyed them, but like, I think most cast members will tell you that like, oh yeah, like there are dark, desolate times when you feel like you're not part of the thing. But I was even talking to like Kristen Wiig when she hosted over Christmas, where she was like, and she was very encouraging, and she was like, you know, you should just appreciate this job, even in the bad times. You should just remember that it's the funnest job in the world, because when you're gone, you'll miss it. And I was like, oh my God, like to have her say it is like one thing, because it's her, but then to have her also acknowledge that there are bad, hard times, which means that she's had those times, is like kind of crazy to me, because I'm like, yeah, I thought you had like as desirable and ideal of a tenure here as anyone would want. But even she probably experienced those moments of like, God, I can't hack it or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, it, I mean, I don't know how it is now, but yes, you're working in Rockefeller Center, which I mean, I still can't believe that I got to work for 7 years in Rockefeller Center and I had an office, but working in that building. And also too, I mean, cause I used to, on Thursdays when there would be the musical guest would rehearse, we would just go down the stairwell one floor and then pop in the back door of the stage and then stand and watch fill in the blank, watch Prince, you know, like from 20 feet away with 30 other people. And just that feeling of, it's like, wow,
you're here,
this
you're
is
in it.
TV. Like I'm really, I am in TV now. And it still, you know, is thrilling. It's still like, can't kind of believe it.
That's great. Cause I'm like, will this ever go away? I mean, I'm like, will I ever be so like, I don't know, numb to that reality? Because I guess, cause I still wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is it. Yeah.
Well, you're not. If that goes away, that means you're an asshole, basically.
Maybe I'm an asshole. Yeah.
Give it time. I could become one. Well, now you started, you first crossed my radar by doing lip sync videos.
Oh, sure.
On the internet. And what spurred that on? We just like just fucking around and in your apartment and
basically, yeah. I mean, there was a live show that happens every year in Brooklyn called the Inner Beauty Pageant, and it's run by this fantastic comedian, Joe Firestone. And there was like you had to design your own swimsuit, and then you also had to come up with a talent. It's like a traditional beauty pageant structure. And so I couldn't figure anything out. And so I was like, you know what? I'll lip sync to this like clip of Tyra Banks yelling at this poor girl.
Oh, right.
We were rooting for you. We're all rooting for you. And I did that at the show. Was kind of like truly shocked at like people like it. Because I was like, this is such a gimmicky, like party tricky thing. But people like it. And then I remember just being sick one day. I was home, bored, fucking around with my camera, and just did it and posted it to Twitter. And I was like, oh, okay, this is that same like weirdly scaled response where I'm like, oh, people like this more than I thought they would. Yeah. Which I know sounds like really whatever. Dumb, but I was just like, oh, this is interesting. And then I just kind of like kept it going. And then after a certain point, I was like, you know what? There's something about this that I started to get very insecure about it, because I was like, because for a while I like wasn't really like writing well comedy wise. And I was like, you know, I should maybe rest this thing because it's not generative in the sense of like, it's an idea coming from my head and I'm like executing it on the page, the stage, whatever. So I was like, I should like maybe just phase this out because it feels like it's contingent on what another person says or does, which I know sounds, again, very abstract. But that's when I was like, you know, I'll let me just like rest this. And so I haven't really done it since. But
now, when you got the job writing on SNL, was that, did you come to their attention because of those videos?
I don't think it was because of those videos. I went the pretty traditional route of submitting the tape with my characters, fully thinking they would never hire me. I am like fully, I do not fit into that. There is no lane for me there.
Yeah. Do you think that's just not because you're Asian?
Because it was that, it was my sort of sensibility probably being a little too like not family friendly, but like truly like not compatible with what they do there.
Do you mean gayer?
Gayer and also just like, which is not the same thing, but also probably just like, I don't know, lewder and just like just dirtier at the time. I remember just being very into, by the time I got to college, I like discovered, she'd already been very established at the time, but I like discovered Sarah Silverman and it was just like, oh my God, like that's like, that's sort of like her wheelhouse and is like, let me try that on for size. And
And she's a genius at it too.
Like that was kind of like the little neighborhood I was in comedically at the time when I first auditioned. But I was like, all right, well, let me put together this tape. I did like this, like my soul cycle instructor guy. I did I did a Michiko Kakutani impression. She like writes reviews for the New York Times.
I know she is,
Okay, great.
We're mutuals on Twitter.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, you and Michiko. Is her avatar still that little egg or something? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big one. That's a good follow.
I know. I'm impressed. Yeah, I still am
with
impressed.
Yourself?
Yeah. She's smart.
Oh my God. So smart.
When smart people follow me, I'm like, oh, well.
I know. Hello. I know. She, but I just loved that she, like, no one, like she's only had her picture taken like, you know, twice in her life and no one knows what she sounds like. And so I was like, great, this is perfect for me to do an impression of her, quote unquote.
Right, right.
I get to just make it whatever I want.
Has that been on the show? Because I don't know that I've ever.
It has not been on the show. I don't think there's a place for it.
But they could, I mean, you know, that whatever the impression is could be anybody, you know, I mean, if it, you know
oh,
what
sure.
I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. It could be. I just feel like it was a little mean-spirited because I was in a scarf and a wig, but the voice was butch like this, and it's Michiko Kakutani, and I'm gonna go punch Juno Diaz in the face. It was like that. That was the impression. And so I don't know that there's a place for it, but I did this because I was truly like, I was treating the tape as a bit. I was like, there's no way this is ever gonna like move past the first stage gate or whatever. And so, but I mean, thank goodness for it, because I think it was a very true to me tape. And so it made it to them. And then I got the showcase, and then I got the screen test. And so it happened through that route, and then kept coming back in and kept being asked to do new stuff. And then they put me on hold for a year, came back the next year, did it again. Then they were like, not cast, but maybe writer. I was like, so happy to do it. And then just kind of started there.
Was the year that you got hired as a writer, was that the first time that you had made your complete living in show business?
Yeah, it was. I had just left my day job as just doing like graphic marketing design, like a few months before, because at that point I had already done the audition twice, and I kept my day job for a year.
Yeah.
But I spent that whole year being like, well, if I got that far in the SNL audition process, hopefully that means I can strike out on my own and not have to worry about this and just see.
Yeah.
But then it timed out very well, where I left my job and then 3 months later got hired to do SNL.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Next up is Aisha Tyler. Aisha's just, I've known Aisha for a long, long time, and she just has really evolved into kind of doing everything. She, you know, she's a stand-up comedian. She was a sketch comedian. Then she was on a talk show, an opinion-driven talk show for a long time. And now she's fighting zombies on TV. She talks a little bit about growing up as a hippie, as she's another Northern Californian. She talks about being a lapsed vegetarian. And sort of what her after death plans are, and talking about, and she's the, as far as I know, the only guest we've had so far who grew up on an ashram or ashram. I don't know. I'm from Illinois, so it's ashram. Enjoy Aisha Tyler.
I am a secret hippie. I'm a closet.
Are you
I'm a closet hippie. Yeah, I am.
A lot of fish playing at your house all the time.
Oh God, not that kind of hippie. But the lyric, the license plate on my car is the lyric of a Pink Floyd song.
Oh wow!
Yeah, off of. I'm not going to say what it is, lest people follow me around.
Right, exactly.
But I do. I am an old school hippie, and I have. The first album I bought was Metallica's Kill 'Em All. That's not hippie music. But I was really into Zapp and The Doors. And I have been to a few Grateful Dead concerts.
Yeah.
Oh God, who was that band? Now their name is not even in my head. And I loved them. The band where the lead guy was also this incredible flautist.
Oh, Jethro Tull?
Jethro Tull. I was not such a fan that I remember their names, but I was a huge Jethro Tull.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm very old. I'm vintage. And also my parents were like, they grew up on the East Coast, but they moved to California specifically because they were big hippies. So I lived in an ashram when I was growing up. I was raised a vegetarian.
Wow.
Meditating, all of that stuff. So yes,
Are you still a vegetarian? Have you managed?
No. Well, here's what's interesting. And you were talking about how experiences when you're a kid kind of become seminal in your life, right? So I was raised a vegetarian, but not in a vegetarian community, really. Like at the ashram was vegetarian, but at school everybody had like bologna and shit. And so like, that's not fucking cool. And like,
right.
not only do you not have meat, but like you have literally inedible hunks of like carbon based matter for lunch. Like that kid's got pizza and you've got like a date.
Or so, spelt or whatever.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, spelt would have been elevated. Yeah, yeah. It was like dates and these like kind of fig Newtons that were made out of like bark.
Yeah.
And so I was just like a beggar when I was a kid. Cause like, you know, typically the currency of childhood is like, I'll give you half of the bologna for like your Jell-O cup. And I was like, right. I will eat whatever rejecta you choose to fling into the garbage can.
Yeah.
So it was a little isolating. And I wonder, I think when I was older, I found that to be, I mean, not in any kind of like deep trauma way. Cause I'm a pretty bouncy personality, but, I did kind of have a PTSD and then just want to eat like everything, like meat and offal and uni and clams that look like penises and vaginas. I'll do anything now. But now I kind of am a little bit of a flex just because I feel like it's probably better for me. It's probably better for the planet not to be eating a steak every day for breakfast. So I'm pretty much vegetarian at home and then like I'll go out and eat a steak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm well aware of like how much red meat hurts the planet. And I don't have a lot of stuff about like the actual eating of animals because I do feel like, look at nature.
Animals eat animals.
Everything's
animals,
eating everything, you know?
I have some really hardcore vegan friends that I adore, by the way, if they're listening. Yeah, you're so nice. But they're like, it's cruel. And I do think factory farming is cruel and probably not good for people either because it's very dirty. But eating an animal is no less cruel than like a cheetah just snapping up a gazelle and eating it from the ass end forward while the gazelle is still aware and watching itself be devoured.
Yeah.
There goes my other haunch. Yeah, okay, great. Yeah. This is going terribly. Oh, my liver. There we go. So yeah. So I think eating less meat is just kind of like a good idea, but I agree. I don't really have like a moral thing about eating animals. If I was like one of those people, I'd like hunt. Like I have a buddy who was vegan for a while, but he's like, I'll catch my own meat. And we were like,
yeah, okay, I love that shit.
Let's see how long that lasts. Yeah. You know, it didn't last long.
It didn't last long. Yeah. I love to fish, but I only like to fish if I can eat them because then like me harassing this fish has a purpose. Whereas if you like just catch a fish and then pull it into the boat and take the hook out and throw it back, I just feel like that's just mean.
Dick.
Yeah.
Now he's got like a gaping injury in his mouth. It's never going to heal right.
It's like somebody, you know, throwing you into the back of a van and driving you halfway across town and then dumping you off. You know, it's
like, and you're like, what was the purpose of any of this?
Yeah. Way to go.
I wanted a photo.
Yeah. Yeah. I took a picture holding your foot. Oh, up in the air. Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree.
Yeah.
But I think I would hunt. I mean,
I would too. If I live somewhere, I have friends that live upstate New York and like they can't grow a garden because there's so many deer. And I feel like, well, hell yeah. If I had, you know, venison showing up in my backyard, I might take a pop at it just to, you know, turn it into protein. I feel the same way about me. Like I'd be happy to be turned into protein for somebody.
I think it would be a nice legacy, a way to live on. You know, now you're no longer Andy. You're a gazelle, whatever.
Well, I'd be happy to just, you know, dog food. That'd be fine. I honestly don't care. That'd be fine.
I actually, that's so interesting because I'm kind of in the same boat. Like once I'm out of this vessel, I'm not really that invested in what happens to it next. Mm-mm. I definitely want to donate all my organs and stuff. And then, you know, like the scraps, bury it in the backyard.
right. No, my directives are just cremated and toss me in water. I don't even, it could be a puddle. I don't
stir
care.
Stir Andy into water like a scoop of Metamucil.
I just don't want to take up any real estate. I think that's silly that every dead person needs a place to lay down and can't do something else with.
There's not enough real estate, quite honestly,
to bury
everybody in a 6x6x3 foot grave. It's just not going to work. So, yes.
Well, now, I want to go back to ashram. You're the first guest I've had. Well, maybe the first person I've known. Raised in an ashram. Now, is that when your parents are together? Because I know they split kind of young.
They split when I was 10. So it was before then. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were together, but it was, and it's interesting because I have really positive memories about it. People like watch Wild Wild Country and they think everybody was like trying to poison each other and have group sex.
Yeah.
It was a very, very anodyne experience, but men and women couldn't live together in this ashram, even if you were married. So, it was kind of like dormitory living. So I lived with some other like adult women, just kind of like nice ladies. And my parents were around, and it was really fun because it was kind of a compound. So like you had a lot of autonomy as a kid in there because it was super safe. So you could run around everywhere and play, and you could hide. There were all these really cool places to hide in this thing and like spy on people and then yell at them and scare them. And I mean, it was, and then you had some kind of, you know, I went to school and I did my homework and I had some responsibilities. I did some chores, but it was rad. Like, one of the things that was really common was that people would bring offerings into the ashram, like flowers, and they would bring a lot of candy. And so the candy situation in this joint was just premium A1 abundance. And they wouldn't just bring like chocolate bars. They'd bring like, you know, like boxes of C's candy, you know, like chewy nuts. And
and is that just meant as an offering to
the like
Buddha?
You know, like people, like exactly to like the gods or, you know, it, people knew that it would end up it would end up in the community. So it was kind of a way to like make an offering, and then they knew that it would get eaten. Yeah, it was just rad. I was just like chomping down on like cordial cherries on a regular basis.
Cordial cherries. all the grandma candies.
Yeah, like all the Werther's, the chewy caramels, the cordials.
The ribbon candies in a tin that they may have been there for 10 years.
Forever. No one, what is the flavor of ribbon candy other than like, you know,
just
red?
Just sugar.
Yeah, totally.
But I had a great aunt, a spinster aunt. Classics. And she always had like just I don't know where she got them, the weirdest tins of strange like Ukrainian hard candies.
Oh, I love it.
It's just
like inexplicable candy. Yeah. My grandmother loved Werther's and she would eat like a full bag of Werther's a day, and it really fucked with her continence, guys. So just watch out as you get older that you don't slide into some kind of a caramel K-hole where you're just Werthering and pooping all day long.
Just stay on the toilet.
Werther's. Just kick it on the, get that nice high soft seat so you can just kind of go right through you. I'm like, this doesn't seem as fun as it seems to you, Grandma. Is this
right,
really working
right.
for you?
Yeah. Now, are you
one thing
only...
I was going to say about the ashram thing was that... I think like people kind of find it to be very odd, but it just felt like I was at summer camp for most of the time.
How long was it?
I think we lived there a couple years. Yeah. Then we lived in Ethiopia for a while and kind of went to like a meditative retreat. And then my mom lived in India for a while. So my family was really into it. Mm-hmm. And then we moved back into like normal old, like regular American people housing. So.
Yeah. And were they Hindu or were they Buddhists or
that's a good question. So this was like a Hindu like influenced group,
like a Hare Krishna knockoff kind of thing.
Not as exciting as the Hare Krishna's, thank
well,
God.
Because my tolerance for
symbols is very low. I can't be dancing
and head shaving. Yeah,
no, not for me. No, the sect was Siddha Yoga Dham. So it was a very meditation based sect and it was based on kind of Hindu practices. And it just involved like, you know, meditating and chanting and doing some public service. You know, you were required to do like used to do service. Mm-hmm. You know, eating a lot of vegetables and shit. My mom is not into it. Both of my parents have left that group. And my mom is now a Buddhist and she has been for about 25 years.
Oh, wow. And and your dad, is he practicing anything?
My dad's still- just... looking cool. My dad's spending time being the neighborhood Action Jackson.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
Next up is Jason Mantzoukas. Such a funny, funny, just sensitive, talented man. If you don't think you know Jason Mantzoukas, you do. You've seen him in something because he's been in so much stuff and he's so good. He talks a little bit about having cable TV and how that's sort of an old person thing now. He talks a little bit about dad TV, which is one of my favorite genres of television. And then we talk about listening to old-timey radio and how superhero movies are sort of the westerns of today. Here's Jason Mantzoukas.
People like us should be, like older people, should be the people that are like, of course I still watch Colbert, of course I still watch The Tonight Show or whatever is your show. Of course, that's how, you know, like somebody laughed at me recently because I told them I have cable. And they were like, wait, I know. Actually still pay for cable?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. Have things tipped now so hard that to still have cable is preposterous? And the answer was yes. It is perceived of as something only for old people.
Well, sorry.
I know.
I mean, it's like, it's over. No.
That ship has sailed.
And I still watch TV, and it kind of bugs my kids. I put on the TV, and then I put on the guide and flip around and see what's on. And that's...
You discover great stuff.
Yeah. Or just whatever. Honestly, there is still, and it still matters to me, someone else is playing that somewhere.
Yes.
I am making a connection to someone in real time. Whether it's just somebody put on pushed a button on a computer that made, House Hunters International play at this particular moment. But this is happening right now.
Well, to speak to that exact point, it feels like you are living present tense.
Yes.
I'm discovering this other thing that's happening right now as well. We both, me and this show, are living at this moment in time. Not like me calling up anything I want to watch because I can. That seems like a closed circuit, It's just me deciding right now I want to watch Letterkenny on Hulu or whatever. So I'm going to watch it and I'm going to love every episode because it's absolutely genius and hilarious. But there is something wonderful about flipping through channels and catching on Nat Geo some show about a guy who's like, I'm going to, using only primitive tools, I'm going to survive in the pre-Saharan desert for a week. And I'm I want to watch this. I wouldn't have known this, but let me see.
Or the giant monster fish that roamed early, prehistoric waters.
This is just dad TV.
Oh, it's all dad stuff.
Dad TV talk. You with your ancient monsters and me with my survival shows.
My daughter insults. She's like, she was talking about, it was some kind of domestic drama movie, some sort of, poignant family story that touched on truths. And I was like, no, thanks. And she's like, well, I'm sorry that it isn't Braveheart 2. And
I'm
like,
God.
What is that? And she goes, that's all you watch is stuff like that. And I'm like, that is not true.
It is not true. But Braveheart 2 is a great pitch.
But I'm the same way with radio. I flip through. I listen to MSNBC. I listen to Howard. I listen to one of my favorites on SiriusXM is the old-timey radio shows.
Sure.
Like, I love listening to these old radio mysteries, with the old commercials. It's like, talk about old man shit.
This just went to a whole other level. Yeah. You know what I love? I love the old radio dramas where you can really hear the Foley work. Sad.
I like stories. Like, I like if I got to drive at night and it's like, I don't want to listen to a whole audio.
You
want to
turn on the radio and have it be like, woo, 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 woo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's enough, Lorraine. I've had enough from you.
Precisely.
What are you doing with that gun? Oh, no.
Love that shit. I love that shit because, and also too, I just love there's things like whenever I've noticed in them, whenever anybody says Wilbur, I want a divorce. That woman's gonna die. Once you say I want a divorce, or Wilbur's gonna die. One or the other of them. You can't mention divorce on an old-timey radio show.
In the olden days is not allowed. Somebody or both have to die.
Yeah,
they have to be punished for that transgression.
I actually had an idea. I had an idea for a movie script that was set, and it was it was a bigger than just this, but it just happened to be set in the old time radio world. Yeah. And I told it to my agent and he's like, I don't think anybody wants to see that. Okay.
It's so true.
Thank you for the honesty. Yeah. Cause it's like Westerns. Nobody wants to see Westerns. There's fucking great Westerns that get made and no one sees
Nobody's interested in Westerns.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I think our version of Westerns now is superhero movies.
Yes.
Superhero movies are, for all intents and purposes, because Westerns for the previous generation, from the TV Westerns like Rawhide and Bonanza, the pulpy kind of Westerns to John Ford, incredible, beautiful, tremendous cinema, John Huston, John Ford, those Westerns, Nicholas Ray. And then you get into the Sergio Leone. There's so many different versions of Westerns, all the spaghetti Westerns, all that stuff. that's kind of, you know, this is maybe going to sound ridiculous, but that's kind of what's happening now with superhero movies.
No, absolutely. It's, they're formulaic escapes. You know, it's the same thing. Like, I love samurai movies and yeah. I like, and it's, they're all the same sort of elements. You know, it's like Mexican food. There's yep. about eight things and you mix them up in different ways and you get 12 different dishes. You know, I mean, it's,
yeah.
And there's something satisfying about that on a very like biological level. We obviously like that. Yes. We like coming back to slightly different versions of something we've seen before.
Well, there's also like, I mean, I think there's also a finite number of stories and how we tell them is what's interesting.
Yes.
You know, and so, and I think the same thing with songs.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I think that it's that like there, you know, like everybody does a love song. I just happen to love the love songs from the artists I love the most because yes. they speak to me. But
yeah.
that doesn't mean all those other bands and love songs, like people who like the Eagles, a band that I legitimately despise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, great. I like that yeah. you like the Eagles because they resonate with you. They do not with me,
yep.
but that's fine. And that's yeah. kind of what it is, I think, is everybody kind of has a different in. I think everybody's taking inspiration from the same kinds of stories and then putting them out into the world. And everybody, we especially live now in a world where so much stuff is being pushed at us, like an overwhelming amount of content
yeah.
between music and TV and film and like, you know, and then also not to mention social media and like stuff that is now on our screens, whether it's TikTok or Snapchat or in the past Vine or things, small platforms that were also places where creative people could kind of put stuff up that was whatever, funny, informative, whatever version of it. There now people are able to curate a playlist of all of these elements that hits their sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know, there is no longer or very little is there every single person watched MASH last night.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever, you know,
yeah.
whatever.
It's or like Happy Days.
Sure.
It's the number one show on TV. Try and watch a fucking Happy Days.
Oh my God. And when you think about the fact that like, you know, on a weekly basis, like 50 million people watched Happy Days every
yeah.
week compared to like an episode of Parks and Rec that, you know, or 30 Rock where they got like a million people
yeah.
to watch it.
You
yeah, know?
Yeah.
And that is such a wide gap.
Yeah.
You know, we're just in an environment now where it's like, so the audiences for everything are so small so that when something does break through, like a Game of Thrones or something that feels like it has some stab at creating a monocultural experience that everybody is like around the water cooler kind of talking about it. Those are now what used to be very ordinary parts of our week, kind of sharing our thoughts about the show we all watch, has now turned into like, we're all watching different. Everybody's trying to, instead of everybody being like, did you see blank last night? Everybody's trying to turn each other on to the shows they like.
Yeah.
That they assume nobody else knows about.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet.
Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Nikki Glaser's another person that I have known for quite a while and have kind of just seen her explode. She's one of the biggest, best stand-ups out there today. And she's just so, so funny and always, always has been. She's also, well, the thing that I love most about her is just how frank and open and unafraid she is to talk about herself and why she is the way she is. And if she has questions about things, she's not afraid to ask them in a public way. She's
She's a beautiful open book. And we talked a little bit about how your parents might have fucked you up and sort of how you got to end up forgiving them and how your parental relationship changes. And we talked a little bit, she's not a parent, at least as far as I know. I mean, these people, these celebrities all have secret lives that are an absolute mystery to me. But we talked a little bit about what it means to make the right choices as a parent. Here is the hilarious Nikki Glaser.
You know, I've had a long journey with my parents being like fun and partying a lot, and my mom and them drinking, and then me stopping drinking and wanting to be removed from them because of that, and resenting, like working on all these resentments in therapy. I mean, therapy is pretty much you just go and learn how your parents fucked you up, and then you learn to like hate them for it, and then you learn to forgive them for it and accept them as they are. And it's a long process. So I'm at that point, and especially living with them this past year, where I just, no matter what ways they fucked me up, it has served me, and I can see that now. And they're not evil. They only meant well. They actually, that I did my best shit, I always was like, really, you did I don't really buy that, but they love me, and and I've accepted that the things they're not great at is just a product of how they were raised. And I do get frustrated sometimes, though, and I think I try to, with my stand-up and going on podcasts and being so honest, is I want them to hear that and learn to be as honest with their feelings as I am, because I think it would free them from some of the things that they struggle with that I, you know, but you can't make your parents go to therapy or talk about their feelings. But
no,
I love them so much. I really am grateful that, I'm just, in the end, I'm so thankful that for the parents I have. They really are awesome and so fun. And I just like did a reality show with them over pandemic. I was living with my parents and I go, this is a reality show. And that's all the shows I watch is reality. It's like, that's what I like to watch. And I feel like if I was a producer on it, I could control it in a way where I wouldn't look like a housewife, you know, like flipping tables. So I was like, we should do this show. So I pitched it. And then, you know, by the time I moved out is when they're ready to film it. And I'm like, oh God, I got to go back and do this. So we just shot a pilot and they were hilarious. And it was, and now I realize I did that because they're going to be gone someday. And I want to look back and be able to see footage of them and really remember them. So it's, and I want to spend more time with them and have a reason to stay in St. Louis and not have to have to go back to New York or LA.
It, you know, I saw a lot of videos online of you guys on Instagram, you know, throughout the pandemic, and there, you can tell that there's a lot of love there and that it's, and like, I watch them like, you know, like excited or not, you know, I don't know,
no, excited, people,
but you know,
would.
I looked forward to your videos with your folks because A, it's a weird situation, like
totally.
to have to go back home. Jesus Christ. I don't know. I think I'd sleep in the garage or something. But there did seem, there's just warmth and love and, you know, and it, you can see that they love you and they are very proud of you.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I
mean, they're assholes.
They are so proud of me. And they like, I realize now, like I pursued this because of them. Like my dad's sense of humor, you know, my dad was the first one to turn me on to Conan when I was fairly young and was like, you got to check out the show. And I always tell this story, but the first time I saw the show, like the stuff you guys were doing, I just felt finally like understood. Like there's weirdos like me that laugh, that think like people are doing this stuff. You know, it blew my mind. I just remember the moment in like that I saw the show and then I became obsessed. And so the things he exposed me to shaped who I am comedically. And I'm constantly trying to get their love and attention and approval, and they love famous people. And so like that, and the reality show thing, my mom loves reality. And I hear Howard Stern talk about how he got into radio because his dad only liked listening to the radio and he wanted his dad's attention. And I realized, oh, that's why I want a reality show. My mom is much more interested in the housewives' personal lives than she is mine. And it almost bothers me that my mom doesn't care that I'm not married yet and don't have kids. Like they're totally fine with it. And I would almost rather her be like, so did you meet anyone? Like there's never that push, which is actually a very nice thing because I don't feel any pressure. And also, I want to say, like, my parents are my, like, kids to me. Like, they inspire me to work because I want to be able to get them into a really good nursing home someday. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I don't want to, I want them to be able to be taken care of and not get, you know, festering bed sores. So I take gigs
and
that
you
I wouldn't.
You sure as shit don't want to be sponge bathing them.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to be, you know, whenever they buy new shit in their house, I go, I'm not going to like look at that and go, Lauren, do you want this? I'm going to hire someone to go through all of the shit. Like I clean it out now, the stuff you want me to keep, because I'm going to have someone else do it. And that's why I work hard, is I want money to be able to pay people to do the things I don't want to do. Cause I, you know, but that is, you know, it's not about fame anymore. It's really about being able to take care of my parents. And until I have kids, I was hearing you talk about to Zach Galifianakis in your podcast with him about having kids and how it motivates you and gives you just a new reason for living. And I really feel like living with my parents and seeing them getting more dependent on me and just, you know, my eyesight and my ability to lift chairs. It really was like, okay, I gotta work harder. I'm gonna accept this commercial that I don't wanna do, or I'm gonna go, you know, I gotta think about how to earn more money so I can afford that bunker because the world's ending soon, you know?
Well, I can understand, like, for me, when I hear you say, like, my mom's more interested in the housewives' life than your life, it's because the housewives' lives are easy. Yeah. Like, to be worried about your life is, like, that's real. And that's,
and
like,
she's not responsible for the Countess being bad with men. Whereas has a role for me in that.
Yeah. And if the Countess really fucks up, it's like, it's good. Whereas if you really fuck up, it's terrible.
It's painful.
It's awful. Yeah. It's the end of her life in a way, you know?
You're so right. I never even thought about that, honestly.
Yeah. And it's having kids. I thought of it when you were talking about it earlier too, that, you know, the thing about when you were saying, you know, your parents, they did the best they can. Like, yeah, I see what you mean. Like, you got to aim high. You know, like, you got to, you know, you can't just phone it in when you're a parent. But also, the fact is, it's terrifying. You don't know what you're doing a lot of the time. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I admitted to my son, because he's the oldest, everything we went through with you, you were the first one that we went through that. Like, you were the first.
You were the beta
kid that went to kindergarten. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like, you know, and there's times even to this day where I make choices as a parent and go, oh my God, I hope this is the right choice. Like, yeah. I hope I'm not making it worse. And if you're making it worse, like, if you make a choice where you hire the wrong roofing guy, your roof will leak and you'll get it fixed. But if you fuck up with your kids.
Well, you know, Elizabeth Smart's dad hired a roofing guy who later kidnapped his daughter and took her to the woods. So the decision on a roofer can be a fraught one. But no, I know what you mean. Like, and that is why I don't think I can have kids. I mean, the number one thing I always say about kids is, like, how can you sign up for something that if something happens to them, your life is over? Like, you will not be able to recover from that. I mean, that is the biggest risk. And it's so could happen. I mean, kids are stupid. And there's so many ways now that they can be harmed. You're signing yourself. You're taking such a risk. And I think being a parent is honestly, like, more brave than anything me getting up in front of people and talking or whatever, like those things. People are like, you're so brave. You talked about your vagina on your Netflix special, but loving something that much that something could happen and your life would be over and you'd have to live. It's just, I think it's the bravest thing. And I don't think I could do it.
You don't. I mean, I think generally it just becomes a thing where, you know, you're with somebody and it just kind of comes on you, this feeling of, like, it's time for us to have a child.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't think that you think about it until later.
Yeah.
Until later.
To make it with someone. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is, like, you know, and I mean, there's plenty of people that have kids solo and that's
Totally
normal too, you know?
Yeah. Everyone got into chess after the Queen's Gambit. Everyone was like, oh, I'm buying. I learned that I really want to get into chess. And I was like, I think I want to adopt an adult child who can just take me on luxurious trips. I was like, that was the first time I was like, oh, you can adopt like a 16-year-old. Like, that sounds great to me. Because at that point, they're less likely to, like, you know, walk into traffic and stuff like that. And so, yeah, there is a part of me that like wants to adopt. And I actually, when I was getting ready to talk to you, I called my dad to be like, oh, you know, he might ask about my ancestry, where I've been, where I'm from. And so I asked my dad about like my roots, and my dad was so excited to talk about all this stuff. But he, I go, you know what? The Glazer name is going to end with us because we have no males to like keep the name going unless I become a single mother. So I have even more incentive because now the name could keep going possibly.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
Tim Meadows is truly one of my dearest, oldest friends. We have known each other 30 plus years now. And he is one of the kindest, sweetest, gentlest souls you will ever meet. And I was really, really happy to have him on the show because he does not like to publicly share. It's funny. We had Nikki, it was the previous clip, Nikki Glazer, and she's a bit of an oversharer, one might say. I mean, for me, there's no such thing as oversharing. If you want to tell me, I'll hear it. But Tim is a little more shy. He's a little more reticent. So it meant a lot to me that he was willing to come on this show and be frank and honest. And it's one of the most beautiful interviews I've ever done. He talked about Chris Farley. It was a very emotional conversation. And again, I just appreciate how open he was. And he also talks a little bit about how Jane Lynch stole his girlfriend. Here's Tim Meadows. Now were you hired at the same time as Chris Farley? Were you guys like,
he went out before me. Yeah. Actually. Yeah. He got hired at the beginning of that season. And then I came out in February.
Yeah.
The halfway point.
Yeah, and because you guys had been friends before that, pretty close friends,
Yeah, because we both got hired on main stage of Second City at the same time.
Yeah.
And we were both in touring companies, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so to do that jump together was kind of scary because we were like, holy shit, people hated us because we got jumped. We got promoted over everybody.
Right.
It wasn't like we deserved it, even though I think he did, but it was Dale Close who was, you know, he was like, I'm picking who I want in my show for main stage.
Yeah.
And so he picked us. That was it.
Well, yeah, then you deserve it. I mean, you know, I mean, you guys are very different performers, though. I mean, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. You're an excellent actor. You know, you're funny, but you play things real. And he does the exact opposite. You know, he's a goddamn traveling circus all in one person. Yeah. He was amazing. I mean, I got to see him a little bit live at different improv shows. But when I was getting there, he had already been to SNL. But then he came back to Chicago and was living on Well Street, you know, near Second City. And living quite unhealthfully, unfortunately. Yeah.
I have really great memories of him. And like sometimes things will flash in my mind. I'll go, oh, yeah, I got to start writing things down so that I don't forget.
Yeah.
But I had these memories like when we were writing at Second City, he and I we were just nervous during the day, you know. Mm-hmm. And so our schedule would be like we'd get up in the morning or an afternoon or whatever. We'd go eat breakfast. We'd walk and go see a movie downtown somewhere. No matter what, we just go see a movie.
Yeah.
We'd go back home to my place. I would fall asleep on my couch. He would fall asleep on the floor in the living room of me and Richard Label's apartment. Mm-hmm. And he would wake up at about 6 o'clock, shake me, wake me up, say he was leaving. He'd go home, shower, and I'd meet him at the theater.
Yeah.
So he didn't have time to drink or get high before the show.
Yeah.
And so we had that schedule going for a while. And I just remember these moments of like napping on the couch and waking up and looking over and seeing him just all just passed out on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Sleeping soundly like a baby.
Yeah.
Not drunk or anything.
Yeah.
You know. And I just, you know, it's those kind of memories of him. And I'm just like, that were really special.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, we had this moment once at Saturday Night Live.
It was like the last show. I'm sorry.
It's okay, man. It's all right.
I'm sorry.
Now I get choked up talking about it sometimes.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like I'm just on the phone with you.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I guess. I tricked you.
We were at it was the last show of that first season, and he and I were getting ready to go to the party, which was downstairs. Remember, like at the rink?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were at that elevator bank on 17, just like in the back, you know? And so we were waiting. And he looks over at me and he goes, "Timmy, can you believe this?" And I was like, "No.
Yeah.
I can't believe it." And he goes, we're on Saturday Night Live."
Yeah.
I was like, "Yeah, I know. And then he goes, "Let's just do this one time." So he hugs me like really tight. And it was just like, I don't want to forget this moment. You know, he's just like our first year on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And it was so, so great. He's such a great guy, man. I miss him. Think about him every day.
Yeah.
Every day. And when I do comedy, I think of things that like going to make him laugh. I think that'll get him, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. Fuck, I didn't.
That's all right. I didn't. This is what I didn't want to do to you is make you cry. I didn't think about making you cry, but I mean.
You wanted it.
I'd be a terrible bar.
You want to get your podcast awards?
Yeah. I was under the table. I'm like doing a fist pump. Like my arm hurts from all the fist pumps I'm doing. Yeah, no, he was. I don't know anybody that didn't like him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, and you know what? Honestly, that's something I could say about you too. I don't know anybody that doesn't like you. You are one of the most loved comedy people.
That's sweet.
And I mean, and everybody, you know, everybody's got wrinkles and warts and, you know, foibles and stuff. But you know, you're a very well loved person, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I was listening to your podcast once. It was funny. It was Jane Lynch.
Yeah.
And she was telling the story about Faith Soloway.
Yeah.
Where I was dating Faith at the time. And Faith was a piano player. I don't know. People listening can look it up or whatever.
Faith Soloway is now Joey Soloway's sister and was with her, with Joey in the early days creating the Real Life Brady Bunch. And
right.
And she also, Faith was possibly the best improv pianist in Chicago at the time. She was amazing.
Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
But she and I was dating and then she had not come out. And then, so we were on the road and I guess, as I remember it, she just didn't come home. Like she was supposed to come back and like come to my apartment or whatever. She just didn't come back. And I was like, "What's up? Where is she? And then when she did come back and we talked about it, she came out to me but she never told me who it was with.
Yeah.
So when I was listening to your podcast, I heard that it was Jane Lynch.
Oh, really?
She said it during the podcast. And then what was funny about it was that she was dating Tim Meadows at the time. And you go, "Oh, I love Timmy." And she goes, I do too. I love Timmy. He's such a sweet person." And you guys were both going like, "He's the nicest guy. He's the nicest guy. Yeah. She just told a story about stealing my girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well.
He's such a nice guy.
Yeah,
I fucked his girlfriend.
I think you were dating Faith when I first met you. And I'd kind of met you at like some improv thing. And then you were in a Circuit City commercial. It was like some.
Yeah.
I was a PA on it. And you were like, you know, a guy in a red vest selling TVs.
Yeah.
That was like when we first started getting to know each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing like that. I
like the moment you had that you had with Chris, you know, that like just the appreciation is so, it's so important to keep that. And it can take extra effort, you know, it's like a lot of what happens to you in show business takes extra effort to remain humble, to remain grateful, to remain normal and to not be a fucking prick. It takes work to stay that way. And I like Jane is a perfect example of someone who's definitely stayed that way. Mm-hmm. And you know, the other side of that being feeling lucky is also being like so amazed at how many people that I knew back then are now household names. There's not, you know, like everybody knows them. And it's amazing to me to think about it because I didn't have any plan, you know? It's like you said, you just like this and follow this. And I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be on TV a bunch. I just was like, yeah, this is fun. Yeah. Let's see, you know?
It's like David Pasquazi says, it's like when we were doing improv, it led to a road to nowhere, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you had no guarantee that anything was going to come from it.
Yeah.
We were doing it because we were trying to learn how to do this art form and, you know, how to entertain people for an hour with one, off of one word.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, it is fun. There's definitely like an adrenaline charge from being able to do it. And when I was doing it on a regular basis, I felt like my brain was a muscle, you know, like it just, there was a high from just that feeling of like knowing, like, I can get in front of people for an hour and a half without any idea and really entertain them, you know?
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Well, that's it for the best of 2021. It's only going to get better in 2022. I swear to God, people, get off that ledge. You know, get your head out of the oven. It's going to be fine. We're going to do this. And again, I said this last time we did a sort of recap episode. It really means a lot to me that you people are listening to this show and that it matters to you and that you let me know it matters. Podcasts, you know, everyone jokes about how everyone has a podcast and, you know, and yeah, I'm one of those people. Yeah. That guy's got a podcast too. And at times you wonder like, yeah, is anybody even listening? But I know that you are because you let me know that you are. And it is very impactful and very meaningful to me that you do. And I just want to thank you for your loyalty. Thank you for your time. And I will see you next week with more Three Questions. Bye-bye.
Got a big, big love for you.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It is produced by Lane Gerbig, engineered by Marina Pais, and talent produced by Galitza Hayek. The associate producer is Jen Samples, supervising producer Aaron Blayert, and executive producers Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.